folks, this is Pastor Mike Hargard coming to you from Watchmen Studios with another Watchmen video broadcast. We're going to start a new series because I never finish a series. Okay, we're going to start a new one, even though I need to go back and try to finish the other ones. I will, maybe. Anyway, a new series called The Future. Pretty catchy, huh? Actually, that's what this Bible is really all about. It tells us the past, and in telling us the past, it tells us the future. In the Old Testament, you have in the book of Ecclesiastes, you have the words of the preacher, King Solomon. He says, all the rivers run into the sea. This is Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 7. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. And then he says, the thing that hath been, that's all this in the Old Testament, it is that which shall be. Think of the water that's in the river. It goes down into here. We have the Mississippi. It goes down into the Gulf of Mexico. The sun and the wind pick it up, put it in the clouds. The clouds come back up over Missouri, dump the rain back on the ground. It runs back into the Mississippi River. That which was is that which shall be. God designed everything in the universe goes in cycles, and time is very cyclical. So what we have here is God explaining to us that in the typology and the prophecy, the doctrines that we find in the Bible, those things we're going to see again as we approach the end of the age, the end of the world, as we approach the second coming of Jesus Christ. There are things that we should be looking for, things that if we read the Bible, believe the Bible, and think on the Bible, God will then give us light and understanding concerning the things that are going on even right now. And I'll give you a little example. My wife sent me a text message this morning. I was on my way to work. And when I got here, I opened up the text message and it was a screen capture from her phone. And her phone, she was still at the house. And as she got ready to leave, she and her mother go to a meeting every Thursday morning at a certain place. And as she got in the car, her phone lit up with a notification saying, it is a 23-minute drive to such and such and such and such, which is the place where they have the meeting. And, you know, be careful. The traffic is good. And she sent that to me and she said, this is scary. And I said, yes, the AI gods are watching over you. And what happens is Google is aware that my wife and her mother, because her mother has a cell phone too, that my wife and her mother go to a certain place for a meeting every Thursday morning at the same time. And so it just put up a notification saying traffic is good, be careful, it's a 23-minute ride to this particular place. Okay? So this is things that are happening and things that we're seeing right now. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the future of technology, quantum physics, okay? Computer technology. Artificial intelligence, which is what told my... There wasn't some guy in a cubicle going, hey, Lisa Hoggard's leaving. You want me to send her a notification? And a boss comes over and says, yes, just tell her to be careful. It's a 23-minute drive. That none of that happened because it couldn't. There's not one person in a cubicle for every human being on the planet that owns a cell phone. There is, however, an artificial intelligence system that monitors and knows and tracks the habits of everybody on the earth who has one of these mobile devices. All right, we are feeding the beast right now with all of this data and all of this intelligence, we're going to talk about that. Computer technology, artificial intelligence, genetics, DNA, all of these seen in the light of Bible prophecy. Is it related to Bible prophecy when an artificial intelligence system notifies my wife that she has a 23-minute drive to get to her meeting, when my wife never put into Siri or Hey Google or Alexa or anything like that saying, "Hey Siri, how's my drive going to be to such and such?" It never happened. The AI gods just sent a notification. They knew that this thing was going to happen. Now, do they make mistakes every now and then? Yes. This is how we know, number one, they're not quite developed yet, and number two, that they're not the Most High God, because the Most High God would know whether or not my wife and her mother are really going to this meeting on this particular Thursday or not. But this artificial intelligence doesn't know that yet. And so the Most High God would never make that mistake. The AI gods will make a mistake. And all they have to do, according to Deuteronomy 18, all they have to do is be wrong one time. And we don't have to listen to the wording of that. We do not have to fear that prophet. All right? So, and I'll kind of talk more about that as we move along through this series. Okay? First place we're going to go to in our Bible, Daniel. Hey, I have it open here. Daniel chapter 12. And let's look at verse 3. "And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro," and I want you to notice here, "knowledge shall be increased." So, I want you to think, and I thought about this the other day. We know that our knowledge of the physical universe that we live in right now definitely is increasing. There's more that we know about the human body, how it works. There's more that we know about DNA. If you figure 100 years ago, when all the expanse of human history, some 6,000 years, yes, I believe that, all the amount of human knowledge all together for the past 6,000 years does not add up to the amount of knowledge that we have, I would say, in the last 60 some years, okay? Since Watson and Crick first came out with their knowledge of what DNA looks like, how it works, how it's built, what it looks like, and so on. Since they came out with that knowledge, our knowledge since the 1950s, the space age, has definitely increased, and we know more now than all of the human beings throughout all of history ever knew. So knowledge shall be increased. But I had this thought the other day. One of the things that we know about artificial intelligence, computers that are taking on the intelligence or growing and adapting to the intelligence that humans have, even surpassing that intelligence. One of the things that we know about that is that computers need a lot of information. Information that you and I pretty much ignore throughout the day, or we just forget about during the day. If you carry some sort of mobile device on you, I promise you that for the most part, everything you do, everything you say on that mobile device, every place that you go, the things that you purchase, how your car seems to be running that particular day or whatever, all of this data is being sent up to a server somewhere, a cloud, they call it, which is nothing more than a huge, very cold warehouse full of computers and a lot of hard drives to store all of this data. So all of these mundane things that you and I do every day, we forget about them. But the computers have it all stored. And then all of that data, and I mean there is tons of data, all of that data is stored. And then all of that data, the artificial intelligence machine reads that data. It consumes that data. It feeds on that data to give itself more knowledge of your everyday life. If you, like me, wear a smartwatch, okay? I like the notifications I get on here from things that come through my cell phone. I like the fact that I have an app that tells me that the International Space Station is flying over. I can go outside and look at it, and I've done it, okay? But this is monitoring things about me, like my heartbeat, maybe my body temperature. Sometimes I'll be deep in thought, and I'm not kidding you. I'll be deep in thought about something, sitting still for a long time, and all of a sudden my watch will, it'll tickle me. And I'll look at it, and my watch will say, it's time for you to breathe. Okay? And I thought, oh, well, I wasn't breathing? Okay? So anyway, I mean, these things are picking up all this information, and it's not just ignoring it. It's passing it on to the artificial intelligence machine system that is reading all of this and keeping track of it and then using it to analyze me as an individual, but not just me, using it to analyze the habits of all the human beings on the planet that are part of participating in this. And in the world we live in right now, it's almost impossible, not quite impossible, but almost impossible to not, how can I say this? It's almost impossible to not be known by the AI system. I mean, they know something about you, whether you're aware of it or not. Whether you carry a smartphone or you carry a flip phone or your phone still has a dial on it, there are certain things that AI knows about you. So that idea of knowledge shall be increased. Not only is our knowledge of the universe and the world and us and everything else increasing, but the AI's knowledge of literally everything that is happening, and I would say has happened to some extent, its knowledge is increasing exponentially. I mean, it's just massive. I mean, think about it. We put old 8mm films on YouTube, right? Family films that people took back in the, even some in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. I like watching people's old movies from the 60s, 70s, 80s. That was the time that I grew up in. So it's kind of neat for me to go back and see how life was when I was growing up, okay? But all of these videos of our past uploaded to places like YouTube and so on, artificial intelligence systems are being trained to watch those videos, to learn about our history, reading things like Wikipedia. Watson, IBM's artificial intelligence machine, played Jeopardy. And how it played Jeopardy was it read Wikipedia, all of Wikipedia. And then it read, I don't know how many other encyclopedias. So it had this vast amount of information to draw from. And Watson was able to understand Alex Trebek's questions and then pull from this data and give an answer. And Watson beat the two world's best Jeopardy players ever. Watson beat them. So it's really good. Watson is really good at playing Jeopardy. Watson can't tie your shoe yet, okay? Or change your baby's diapers yet. Or, you know, wipe a crumb off of your chin. Okay, Watson can't do those things yet. But the more its knowledge and other AI systems around the world, the more their knowledge is increasing, the more they're going to be able to do for us at first, and then later on to us. Right now, the AI is our servant. We call Siri, we call Google, we call Alexa, and we demand that Siri, Google, Alexa, and all these other AI things, Cortana, we demand that they do certain things for us. And they do it. They do it. At some point, the servant is going to become the king, the master over us. And people are going to yield their rights over to AI. They won't have a choice, but that's what they're going to do. All right? So, enough of that. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. Let's talk about the future of computers. The future of computers is not the iPad, okay? It was neat when it first came out. And it sort of is still neat now, the things that this thing is able to do. But the future of computers is not in the way computers work now, and I'm going to explain that. So you're asking, what is a quantum computer? Take a look at the screen. Now, these are the old version of computers. You had big rooms, massive amounts of space, like in huge office complexes where you had computers operating by way of men or women flipping switches or typing in rudimentary commands into some sort of teletype machine. The computer printing out certain pieces of data upon little strips of paper. But basically, our idea of computers has changed over the last 50 years. Because in the old days, you had computers working on this idea of a programmer back in the early days, literally flipping switches on a big machine in order to tell the computer what to go do with itself. And I'm going to explain this morning, I'm going to explain the difference between how a regular computer works, and then I'm going to show you how a quantum computer works. And when I show you that, you're going to go, I don't understand that. Pastor, could you help me understand that? And I will say to you, I don't understand it either. But we know that it works that way, and it's a little spooky, all right? It's just a little weird, okay? First, let me show you how regular computers work. You know, let me go back to this picture of the guys of flipping switches and, you know, analyzing data on this little strip of paper and so on. But literally, to program computers, the early days, they flipped switches. You know what switches are, right? In fact, I brought a light switch to illustrate it for you today, okay? It's a real working light switch because right now the switch is off. Then when I do this, the switch is on and the light comes on, okay? The switch is off, no light. Switch is on, there's light. Because when I flip the switch off, that means there's a battery in here that wants to send electricity to turn the lights on. But this evil switch is blocking the electricity from the battery getting to the light. And the off switch won't let the electricity get to the light until I flip the switch. And now the electricity is able to reach the light and turn the light on. Off, no light. On, light. Now, take a look at the screen. Turn the light off. This is how computers worked. Okay? They operated in the early days literally on switches being flipped by programmers on or off. You've heard of things like bits and bytes and kilobytes and megabytes and gigabytes and terabytes and petabytes and all of that stuff. Well, up here on the screen is just a simple idea of how this works. Let's say that your computer is going to put on the screen the letter A. Okay, the letter A. Now, that letter A, if you remember back from the old days, like in the days of the early Apple computers, the Commodore computers, the Atari computers, you could literally see on the screen how the letter A was put up there. It was all these little blocks. You could see these little blocks. They were called pixels, picture elements. That's how that word came about. You could see these little blocks that made up the letter A, the blocks that made the letter B, the blocks that made the letter O, and you could always see, you know, in the corners, it wasn't quite round. It was just these little square blocks that made up the letter that was on the screen. Well, back in those days, the computers operated on an 8-bit system. A bit, think of a bit as one little block on the screen. Think of a bit as the switch is, my battery thing came off. Think of a block on the screen as that switch is on. We're going to add some more blocks to make the letter A. So some switches have to be on or off. It's sort of like Morse code to tell the computer what block to put on the screen, where to put that block, all right, and how we're going to make the letter A. So look back on this on your screen again. Let's say to make the letter A, we need 8 bits. We need 8 blocks, all right? And those bits, the first bit has to be on, so that's a number 1. The second bit has to be off, so that's a number 0. The third bit has to be on, so that's a number 1. Fourth bit is 0, so that's the switch is off, so that's a 0. The next 2 bits are on, the switch is on, so that's a number 1. And then the last 2 bits, the switch is off, so those are 2 zeros. You get it. I kind of understand it like this. It's like Morse code. Okay? It's sort of like that, where you have dots and dashes in a sequence representing a certain letter. In computers, it's a certain sequence of zeros, switches off, and ones, the switch is on. Now, I'm explaining this, and even if you don't understand it, don't worry about it, because I'm not going to ask you to actually program your computer. The guys that know how to do this, they do it all the time. They know what zeros and ones have to go in what position and where and so on. All right? But I just want you to understand this concept that a computer operates basically like a light switch. In fact, every computer in the whole world, whether you use a Mac computer, Linux computer, an IBM PC computer, or you're using a cell phone from Samsung, or one from Google, or one from Motorola, or one from Apple, or your iPad, or whatever it, if you go in the hospital and they put one of these heart monitors on you, that's a computer that's operating on zeros and ones. Okay, these bits, same bits, zeros and ones. The machine that pumps the fluid into your body, that's a computer that's operating on zeros and ones. The computer in your car that analyzes data from your car. Did you know that you can plug in a little thing in your car now that will send data to your phone, to an app on your phone, and you're able to read in real time how your engine is working and how your car is doing? And know that if something's not right one morning, it's not starting well, you can pull up the app on your phone and read it. Isn't that cool? I mean, that's technology, right? But it's all just zeros and ones. Every computer in the world operates this same exact way. So, in the real world, the switch is off, no light, no data, or the switch is on, light, the number one, in sequence. Okay, that's how they operate. Now, quantum computers are different. I want you to look up on the screen. Remember the zeros and ones, right? Zero, the switch is off. One, the switch is on. Zero, there's no electricity flowing through that particular circuit. One, there's electricity flowing through that particular circuit. In quantum computers, the switch can be both on and off at the exact same time. It's called quantum superposition. Let me see if I can explain it. Here is the regular position of the switch. It's either off or on. Okay, that's just regular position. Superposition means that the switch is on and off at the same time. See, I can't do that with this. You can't do that with your lamp, your light switch. The light in the refrigerator is either on or off. How do you know it turns off? Huh? The door's shut. The car either starts or it won't start. You've never gone to your car, put the key in, or with mine, I hit a button. You never go out to the car and turn the key and the car be on and off at the exact same time. And if you don't understand that, neither do I. Neither do the people who work with and program quantum computers. They just know that it works. Where the in the quantum realm, okay? I want you to think about, and we're going to explain this with scriptures, okay? I'm going to explain it from the Bible. In the quantum world, the switch to read the information or to display the information is both on and off at the exact same time. Energy is going through and energy is not going through. The light is on and the light is not on at the exact same time. I can turn the switch halfway here, but the light's still off. It still hasn't reached that point where the switch comes on. Okay? I can't do that in this world. But what quantum computers do, this is where it gets really weird. Quantum computers actually tap into a different world. A world that mingles with ours, where the switch for the computer bit, or the quantum bit, which is, they call it a qubit, quantum bit. The quantum bit is on and off at the exact same time. They actually have a computer that works that way. Here it is. It's called the D-Wave. Okay, it's made by the D-Wave company. Here is a picture of the founder of D-Wave. His name is Jordy Rose. Now, Jordy Rose gave a talk. It's the first time I heard about this. And he gave a talk like one of these TED Talks, and he was explaining the future of what quantum computers are going to be able to do. Because of the way they work, where they're able to tap into an alternate universe, and the switch can be in a superposition, what that basically means is that it's able to make millions, billions, trillions, quadrillions, quintillions, sextillions, an almost infinite amount of pieces of information that it processes, an almost infinite amount of calculations a quantum computer is able to do in just a matter of a few seconds. Whereas there are certain formulas and certain calculations that, you know, different mathematicians have come up with, that if we took every computer, in fact, if we took every atom in the universe and converted all of those atoms in the entire universe to a regular 0 and 1 bit computer, okay, we still would not be able to run some of these calculations because it would take billions and billions and billions of years for all of these regular zeros and ones computers to be able to analyze and run that calculation and come up with the answer. And yet, a quantum computer would be able to do it, let's say, in a matter of minutes. That's spooky. Okay, a machine that has the ability to play chess, but not the way people play chess and not the way IBM's Deep Blue computer played chess. See, Deep Blue beat Garry Kasparov. Deep Blue was able to take, Garry Kasparov would make the first move. He'd move this pawn right here, okay? Then Deep Blue would analyze every single possibility of moves from that point forward, one after another, millions and millions and millions of chess moves in just a matter of a few seconds, okay? Maybe it would take 30 seconds to do that. Maybe it'd take a couple minutes to do that. Garry Kasparov has the ability to run through quite a few chess moves ahead. That's how he plays. But he's not able to run through the millions and millions and millions of chess moves that Deep Blue does in a matter of, let's say, 10, 15 minutes. The quantum computer is able to run through every possible chess move and analyze them, not one after another, but all at once. That's scary. Because not only do we not have a human that can do that, we don't have another computer that can do that. Only the quantum computers have the ability to see all the possibilities all at once. Now we're getting into a situation where a computer is more than just a big calculator that can add up stuff really, really fast. Now we're dealing with something that is smarter and can be smarter than every human and every computer that would be in the, if you filled the entire universe, every star had its own Earth and every Earth had 6, 7, 8 billion people on it and they all had computers, they would not be able to outplay the quantum computer, okay? So Jordy Rose is giving this speech about these computers and what they're going to be able to do. And he's fascinated by it. He's saying, this is going to be great. I mean, we're going to cure diseases and we're going to be able to, you know, figure out how to travel through interplanetary space. We're going to be able to figure out how to make warp drives. We're going to figure out how to be able to do this and this and this and this and all these great, wonderful things that this computer is going to be able to do for us. We're going to be able to do it in the very, very near future. Then he explains. Now, he's a guy and him and his company are the people who built this thing, the D-Wave computer. And he said in this particular talk, he said that he was standing next to the D-Wave computer. And what it is, the big box here you see on the screen, it basically is this humongous refrigerator. Because in order for the chip that they made to work, they have to bring the temperature down on this chip to just a few hundredths of a degree above 0 degrees Kelvin. Now, zero, we don't use the Kelvin scale. Science does, but we don't use it. 0 degrees Kelvin, they say, is the lowest possible degree that is attainable in the universe. And at 0 degrees Kelvin, the little electrons that spin around atoms, well, they stop spinning. Okay, everything just freezes at 0 degrees Kelvin. So they have it just warm. They have it just a few hundredths of a degree above 0 degrees Kelvin. That's how this chip is able to do what it does. And he said he's standing next to this machine, and I want you to take a look at this. He described the sound coming from the D-Wave computer as, quote, like standing next to an altar of an alien god. And of course, this made big waves all over the internet, and people have made videos on this, and people have talked about this, and oh my goodness, he's talking about an altar. You know what? I believe him. I believe that they have just created an altar to an alien god. Now, when I say alien, I don't necessarily mean the little gray men that came out of the mothership on Close Encounters of the Third Kind. When I say alien, I mean other gods, evil spirits, devils, evil angels, a third of which are going to get kicked out of heaven, some of which represent the fourth kingdom, some are principalities, or powers, or rulers of the darkness of this world, of spiritual wickedness in high places. And that altar represents the meeting place between the gods and mankind, and the altar almost always represents what the men are willing to give up in order to make these gods happy. He did a talk a little bit later on, and I want you to take a look at this. This screen capture of the YouTube video. You can watch the YouTube video. Jordy Rose of Kindred, he started a new company called Kindred AI, and I'm going to talk about that. He presents super intelligent aliens are coming to Earth. What in the world was he talking about in that particular talk? He basically said, he's got a company now called Kindred AI, and he is looking for software code writers that he called demonologists. He did it tongue-in-cheek, but he's creating an artificial intelligent quantum computer. He said, in the day when these computers become self-aware, in other words, they're going, I'm here, right? The day they become self-aware, he said, everything that you're reading in the paper about what's going on in Washington, D.C., or what Trump tweeted, or who got caught, you know, molesting somebody else in Hollywood, or whatever, he said, all the news that you are reading about in the paper is going to mean absolutely nothing compared to the announcement or the day when these computers attain the intelligence level of humans, become self-aware. And he said, on that day, it's going to be like the aliens are coming to visit the Earth, and now they're here. And he said, we have to figure out what we're going to do about it. And so he said, we need programmers so that we can control what this artificial intelligence system turns out to be. And this is the guy making it. And he is well aware of what this quantum computer, new world order that we're getting into, he's very well aware of what it's capable of. And most of us other people are just going around from place to place and looking at our phones every now and then and going about our business as if everything, just like in 2 Peter, is just like everything is going to continue on and there's not going to be any big changes happening. And he said, we're literally on the precipice of this event happening. Maybe in 13 years, maybe in 20 years, but it is coming. And he said, we need to be ready for it. Now, he's giving this talk. I'm going to go back to this first talk that he did when he's presenting the quantum computer to the world. And this is, he quoted a man by the name of David Deutsch. He was explaining, he's a physicist, and he was explaining how quantum computers work. And this is what he said. Quantum computation will be the first technology that allows useful tasks to be performed in collaboration between, here we go, parallel universes. Parallel what? Parallel universes. You see, there's something about quantum physics and quantum mechanics and the quantum world that has had all of the physicists and all of the scientists who are working in this field scratching their head for years. Einstein called it spooky physics. Spooky, like ghost type stuff. Okay? One of the great physicist, I can't remember his name, that was working in quantum mechanics and quantum physics, basically said, if you think you understand quantum physics, you don't understand quantum physics. Nobody really does. They just know that some of the things that they have discovered about quantum physics and the quantum world, they just know that it works, but they don't quite understand how. But, like David Deutsch said, we're talking about mingling and hooking into a different dimension. Apparently, a dimension that allows a switch to be both off and on simultaneously. You know, there's not a time now when I walk into a room and flip the switch that I don't think about the quantum world where a switch is allowed to be on and off at the exact same time. I walk into a room and I flip a switch and the light comes on. I try real hard to imagine a scenario where I'm standing in a room that is both well lit and completely dark at the same time. And I cannot fathom that. But when quantum computers work, they tap into this universe that allows a switch to be on and off at the same time. It allows a lot of other things going on too. And let me kind of explain it a little bit. The quantum world and what that term means. You see, we grew up in school and we were always taught that atoms were the smallest things in the universe, and that's what everything in our world was made of. The metal in this pen is made of tiny little atoms with protons and neutrons packed in the center and then electrons spinning around it, sort of like the Earth and the moon spinning around it, all right? So, I mean, what's interesting to me is that the smallest things that we knew about, atoms, act just like the biggest things that we know of, and that is the Earth and the sky and everything else. In other words, we have protons and neutrons here in the center of an atom, and we have the electrons sort of in orbit around it. Well, here's the Earth, and we have the moon in orbit around it, just like the hydrogen atom. Okay, it has a proton in the middle, one, and it has an electron spinning around it. Okay? So the biggest things that we can think of, the Earth and the moon, are just like the smallest things we can think of, hydrogen atom, okay? Then we find out that we were wrong, that atoms aren't the smallest things that there are, that atoms, actually, the electrons, the protons, the neutrons that are in an atom are actually made up of smaller things that you've heard about on the news or read about in a news story or something posted on the internet or Facebook or whatever, where you hear about quarks and a particle called the Higgs boson, which they say is the God particle. Why that term? Why bring spirituality into this? In fact, in the Large Hadron Collider, the one at CERN there in Belgium, largest machine ever made by man, this huge tunnel underground where they take these quantum particles, accelerate them almost to the speed of light, smash them into each other, and as they break apart, they see some of the particles that they're made of, okay, including the Higgs boson. And outside of the CERN laboratory, the CERN Large Hadron Collider there, outside of the main office, is this great big statue of the god Shiva, who's called the Destroyer, okay, and surrounded by fire. Why bring spirituality into this? I think it's because that's the nature of the quantum world. You see, these quantum, and the word quantum is like the word quantity. If we were to take everything in the universe and put it together in a basket, we would have the total quantity of everything that's in the universe. So the word quantum is simply a word that describes the particles that make up all of the atoms which make up all of the things that are in the universe. So quantum means the total quantity of everything that exists in our world. That's why they call them quantum particles. So just think about these particles being the building blocks of atoms, which are the building blocks of everything else. If you look at a brick, right? A brick is not one solid piece of material. If you look at it, you see tiny little specks in there. And if you've ever seen bricks made, you know they're made out of clay, and clay is tiny, tiny little parts of, you know, red dirt, red dust particles that are gathered together and, you know, grouped together by water or whatever, held together by water. So even a brick itself is made of smaller particles. And of course, now we know those smaller particles are made of even smaller atoms, which are now we know that they're made of quantum particles. Now, here's, and I spent a long time explaining that because of the importance of what scientists know about how these quantum particles work. You see, in our world, there are rules. There's an order to the world that we live in. This pen is made of atoms. The atoms are grouped together into molecules. The molecules are formed together. There's different types of molecules in here. The molecule that makes the, this is actually a pencil, that makes the lead, the graphite in here. There's a little rubber piece here. And there's different molecules here and different molecules here. Okay, but anyway, all of these together in our world, they follow rules. Okay, so if I drop this, then there's a rule here. It's called the rule of gravity. There's a law, a physical law that acts on all of the different atoms and molecules in this pencil. And if I let go of it, it's going to fall. There's other rules as well, like this pencil is on this side of my Bible. But I don't like my pencil on that side of the Bible. I like my pencil on this side of the Bible. So I need to move the pencil from this side to this side. So there's rules that if I want to move this, it's very simple stuff. If I want to move this from here to there, okay, it travels all through this area here to go to here, okay? And you're going, okay, Hoggard, get with it. Well, here's why I explain that. Because quantum particles, they don't follow the same rules that the things that they make follow. A quantum particle, and I'm going to show you this in a minute, a quantum particle has the ability to go from this spot here to this spot here without actually traveling through all of the space between it. It just goes from here and then it's there. And it hasn't traveled through that space. You see, the quantum world breaks the rules. It doesn't follow the order that's in our world. In our world, it's either light or it's darkness. In the quantum world, light and darkness are the same. Okay? Now, take a look at this. I'm going to run through. There's three sort of ideas about quantum particles and how they work. And all this has to do with this quantum computer. And what does it mean when the switch is on and off at the same time? Is there something in this related to Bible prophecy? Yes, there is. So let me run through just three things that we know about quantum particles and how they don't follow the same order that everything in our world follows. Okay? Number one, quantum tunneling. Number two, quantum entanglement. Number three, the quantum state. And I'll explain these as we move along. First of all, let's deal with quantum tunneling. Remember, if this pen wants to travel or wants to be at this place here, in our world, the physical world, it must travel through all of the three-dimensional space that exists between here and there. And there's nothing in our universe, in our world, the physical world, that can break that rule, that can go against that order, those laws of physics. There's nothing that can change that, all right? But in the quantum world, these quantum particles can do something called quantum tunneling. And that is, take a look at the screen. You have the image of a guy here, and he's got a big piece of paper, and he's going to move this piece of paper to the other side of a hill. So in the physical world, he has to drag this piece of paper up the hill, rest when he gets to the top, and then roll it down the hill. In other words, he has to travel through all the three-dimensional space between point A and point B. But in quantum physics, a quantum particle doesn't have to do that. It can tunnel from one place to the next place and not occupy any of the three-dimensional area between point A and point B. And you're going, come on, I don't believe that. I mean, I think these guys get paid too much money to sit and think of stuff like this up. Let me tell you something. I don't know how they run an experiment to figure out whether this is true or not, but they've run the experiments. And there's guys that know a lot more about how to do things like this than you and I. I don't even know how to fix my car, for crying out loud. These guys can run experiments in quantum particles and know that quantum tunneling actually works. Where a particle was at point A, and then it was at point B, and didn't occupy or travel through any of the three-dimensional space between those two points. Now, if you still think that it's not possible, let's go to the one thing that you and I think we would agree on, is always telling us the truth, and that is the Word of God. You remember the story in Acts chapter 8, where God told Philip, he said, Philip, I want you to rise and go by the way of so-and-so, and he didn't really tell him what he wanted him to do. He just told him to get up and start walking. So that's what Philip did. Next thing he knows, he sees this chariot, and he goes to the chariot, and there's this Ethiopian eunuch who was under Candace, the queen of the Ethiopians, and he more than likely is one of these Ethiopian Jews that they've discovered, and he was traveling from Ethiopia, and he was trying to get to Jerusalem for one of the feast days. While he's in the chariot, he's reading the scriptures. He's reading the book of Isaiah. Isaiah has 66 chapters. The Bible has 66 books in it. Okay, I like stuff like that. But anyway, he's reading Isaiah. And so when Philip sees him, God's like, go talk to him. So Philip goes, he says, can I join you in the chariot? He says, yeah, come on up. So Philip sees that he's reading Isaiah 53. And Philip says, do you understand what you're reading? And the eunuch says, how can I except some man show me? And they're reading, you know, Isaiah 53 is about the prophecy concerning everything that happened to Christ while he's on the cross. You know, he was, by his stripes we were healed. You know, he was bruised for our iniquities and so on. And so the eunuch says, is Isaiah speaking of himself or some other? Then at that point, Philip then fills in the blanks for him. Tells him, this is about Jesus. Let me tell you what Jesus did. Jesus died on the cross. You know what they did? They put stripes on his back. You know what else they did? They bruised him. You know what they did? In other words, Philip is telling that Jesus of Nazareth fulfilled everything that is written in Isaiah 53 and that he was bruised for our iniquities. So he's explaining to him, you can have all of your sins forgiven because Christ took them, nailed them to his cross, and they're not going to be held against you ever again. The eunuch's going, I want this. I want this. So they're traveling. They see a pool of water. The eunuch says, here's water. What doth hinder me from being baptized? And Philip said, if thou believest with all thine heart. And the eunuch said, I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. So by faith, he accepted Jesus. They go down into the water. Philip baptizes the eunuch. Okay. And then, do you remember what happened? Quantum tunneling. Look at the verse. King James Bible. Acts 8:39. And when they were come up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord caught away Philip, that the eunuch saw him no more, and he went on his way rejoicing. But Philip was found at Azotus, and passing through, he preached in all the cities till he came to Caesarea. Do you see what happened here? Philip, they're both coming up out of the water. This eunuch is, I mean, he's probably crying and happy, and the other guy just got saved today, and he wants to thank Philip, and he turns, and Philip's gone. And the next thing you know, Philip appears in Azotus. And according to what I see here, this idea of caught away, Philip was transported from this pool, and then he was in Azotus without passing through any of the three-dimensional space between those two places. quantum tunneling. Now, if you say, well, he did that by way of the Spirit of the Lord, you're exactly right. Because, and see, I like this language here. The Lord caught away Philip, because in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1 or chapter 4, almost the identical same phrase is used. Verse 17, then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. You know, we've always had this idea, oh, I can't wait to that great day that I'm going to fly up into the heavens and meet Jesus in the clouds. Hallelujah, praise the Lord. And, you know, it's not a bad idea, but what the Bible actually says is that we'll be here, and in a moment, we're going to be up there in the clouds. From here, and then we're there, without passing through all of the three-dimensional space between here and there. And it's going to be done by way of the Spirit of the Lord. Okay? Now, the Spirit resides or exists in a dimension or a realm or a world that is higher than ours. Right? So, here's Philip, and he's caught away and probably in the Spirit went from here to there without traveling through all the place between here and there. He just was here and then he was there. That's what quantum tunneling is. Okay? The same with you and I. When we are caught up, we're going to be here and then we're going to be in the clouds in a moment. Just like Philip was here in the pool, and in a moment, he was at Azotus. So, there's got to be, in the quantum world, a connection to spirits. Okay? The quantum world, I believe, is the spiritual realm, where things in that realm do not follow the rules and the order that's in our world. They're above that. Okay? They do not follow the same order or the same rules. Now let's look at quantum entanglement. Quantum entanglement. Let me explain what that is. Let's say that this is my old Bible here, and I have all my notes written in my old Bible. In order to do that, I have to take my pen or my pencil and apply the tip of the pencil to the page here. Okay? So I am affecting the paper with my pencil by putting the pencil on the paper. Okay? In other words, they have to be right together in order for this whole thing to work. But what if I wanted to write something in my Bible, but my Bible was all the way across the room, and I was sitting in my chair, and my back was hurting real bad, and I didn't want to get up? Can I just take a pencil and go in the air, and then make all that stuff appear on my Bible? No. That's stupid. It's a law of physics that we have to actually put the pencil to the paper in order to affect that change in it. You see what I'm saying? Quantum entanglement is different. In the world of quantum entanglement, I can do this here, and without ever touching the paper, I can have the writing show up on the paper over here. It's sort of like if there was a ball in St. Louis, Missouri, and there was a ball in Austin, Texas. Quantum entanglement says I could kick the ball in Festus, Missouri, or St. Louis, Missouri, and the ball in Austin, Texas would just go flying through the air just like the one I kicked in St. Louis. That's quantum entanglement. And you say, that's not possible, Pastor Mike. In this world, you're right. Take a look at the funny little cartoon here. Captain Quantum Entanglement's Unfortunate Weakness. In other words, this guy on one side of the room is just waving his fingers, tickle, 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 and then Captain Quantum Entanglement is, ah, ha, ha, please stop, ha, ha, ha. He's laughing because he's being tickled in the quantum world, even though those two are not in the same proximity to each other. And you say again, I don't believe that. I don't think that exists. Okay? It does. It does. For something in one area to create an effect in another area. Think of the fourth kingdom. In the book of Daniel chapter 2. That fourth kingdom is principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this world and spiritual wickedness in high places. So we're in the fourth kingdom, we're not dealing with men in the physical world ruling over other men in the physical world. We're talking about spirits in the spiritual world, the quantum world, ruling over men, having an effect over them, entangling themselves with men. In Daniel chapter 2, verse 43, and whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. Now, I want you to look at, I don't have this on the screen, I just thought of this, I want you to look in Daniel chapter 2. Because we're going to see a light switch on and off at the same time. Or the equivalent of it, the fourth kingdom equivalent of it. Daniel chapter 2, what leads up to this, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. You're going to see quantum entanglement here. In verse 41, or verse 40, and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. So there's going to be iron in this kingdom, which means it's going to get its way. And if it doesn't get its way, if you don't give it its way, it's going to break you in pieces and bruise you. So it's going to have its way. It's an iron kingdom and nothing can stop it. But then look at verse 42. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong, partly broken. In other words, it's going to be strong, broken. Opposites. It's going to be both strong and broken at the same time. Look in verse 43. And whereas thou saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with miry clay. In other words, you have iron, which never moves, and clay, which always moves, and it's going to be iron clay. It's going to be strong broken, strong weak. Okay? And those two are opposites. You can't be both strong and weak at the same time. You can't be both iron and clay at the same time. But they are going to entangle with mankind and be in a quantum state, just like the computer switch being on and off at the same time. And they're going to do it in the level of man's DNA. Okay? In fact, look at the graphic here that I have next to the verse. I want you to notice that's Washington's Monument. And you notice that they put two circles, and those circles are fused together. And in that middle area, it's called a mandorla. In that middle area, you have the obelisk there. Now, that middle area between the two, think of the two circles as the two universes that are going to merge together so that the switch can be in a superposition, both on and off at the same time. On, off, light, darkness, or dark, light, where light is as darkness. And I keep saying that, I'm quoting scripture. In the quantum world, in the place where these two kingdoms entangle themselves, you have the ability now for it to be iron, clay, light, darkness, on, off, at the same time. That's the quantum world and quantum entanglement. Quantum entanglement has been spoken of in the occult realm for thousands of years in the form of as above, so below. Take a look at the screen. These reflecting pools, they are an image of as above, so below. Notice that the reflecting pool reflects whatever's next to it. Here you have a pyramid, one pointing up and one pointing down. That pyramid, one up and one down, represents the fourth kingdom mingling themselves with men or joining together with men, and they are entangled together so that one is strong and one is weak. Or if you look at it here, one is a mirror image of the other, and yet they are both joined together as one. And what as above, so below means is that whatever happens up here must happen down here. That's quantum entanglement. These gods are falling here. So you know what's going to happen? Simultaneously, men are going to fall here, because there's coming a falling away. Satan falling from heaven, a third of the stars of heaven falling from heaven down to the earth, and men falling at the same time. That is quantum entanglement. Then we have this quantum superposition, and I'm almost done for this session of it. I'm explaining quantum computers and how they work. You have a quantum state or quantum superposition. There was a thought experiment. This is what physicists do. They think. Okay? Man by the name of Schrodinger, and this is called Schrodinger's cat. You can look this up and read all about it. You can watch YouTube videos on it as they try to explain how this works. But it's basically the idea they're trying to explain quantum particles being in a state of both a wave and a particle at the same time. A wave is just simply force moving through space or whatever. A particle is a piece of matter, okay? And what they found out is that the question was, is light in waves or is it in particles? And the answer was, yes. Light is both at its quantum level, smallest particles that there is, that light is both a wave, energy, and mass or matter, a particle, at the same time. And no one can explain how that can be. They just know that in the quantum world, it is in a superposition of both being a particle and a wave at the same time. So think of all of the opposites that you know of in the Bible. On the first day of creation, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And the evening and the morning were the first day. You see the opposites? Light and darkness, and they're divided. One cannot be in the same position as the other, or the same place as the other. If you have darkness, you cannot have light. And if you have light, you cannot have darkness. If you have evening, then you cannot have morning at the same time. One gives way to the other. But in the quantum world, they're both the same. Okay? This is why many of you say, "Pastor, I like what you're saying here, and I believe the King James, but I don't believe angels and humans ever made it. It's not possible. How does that work? How can they get together? One spirit, one human." That's my point. It defies the physical laws. But we're not dealing with physical laws here. We're dealing with quantum realm. And in quantum realm, there is no order. Those rules do not apply. So the sons of God mingling with the daughters of men brought them in a superposition, as it were. Light and darkness in the same place at the same time. And not only that, they had quantum children. The giants, mighty men of old, men of renown, the Bible says. But anyway, back to Schrodinger. Schrodinger had this thought experiment. I'm not going to explain all of it. But there was a scenario where there was a cat in a box. And if some certain thing happened with an atom, then a hammer would break a flask and poison would fill the box and the cat would die. Or nothing happened with the atom and the hammer wouldn't hit the flask and the cat would be alive. So if you looked and observed it, the cat would be either alive or dead. But there was a quantum superposition where the cat was both dead and alive at the same time. And again, you might say, Pastor, I don't get that. That's not possible for something to be dead and alive at the same time. Even Jesus himself said, I am he who was dead, now I am alive. With Jesus, he's not both dead and alive at the same time, like Night of the Living Dead, right? No, he was dead, now he's alive. But his adversary, his opposite, his quantum whatever, the Antichrist, the beast, the man of sin, the son of perdition. Guess what the Bible says about him? This Bible is right. This Bible knows what the quantum world is all about. Let me show it to you. Revelation 17:8. The beast that thou sawest was and is not. Think about it. He was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. That's very, very important. The pit where there's no bottom. The quantum world shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder. Just like you're wondering now. Pastor, I don't get how the switch is on and off at the same time. That don't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me either. This is why all the world is going to wonder after him. Because they're going, I don't see how that works. He's both light and darkness at the same, I don't get it. Watch this. They that dwell on the earth shall wonder whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. When they behold the beast that was, and notice this, and is not, and yet is. There's Schrodinger's cat, wanted dead and alive. It's dead and alive. And the beast, the King James Bible, says it better than any Bible in the world. When they behold the beast that was, and is not, yet is. It doesn't say the beast that was not and now is. It doesn't say that. He is, present tense, not, yet is. Both at the same time. He doesn't exist and exists. He's here and not here. He's off and on. He's dead and alive at the same time. And according to God's rules, the opposites don't mix. Remember what Paul said in 2 Corinthians 6. He said, what agreement hath light with darkness? Or what communion hath light with darkness? What concord hath Christ with Belial? Christ is the God over all the living, the the god of the day. Satan is the prince of darkness, and he's the god of this world, and he is the one who is in charge of death. Those two don't belong together, and Jesus knew it. Satan tried to get Jesus into a concord with him by getting him to agree with him, and Jesus never did. He just kept quoting scriptures. What agreement hath the temple of God with idols? None. They're the opposite. For ye are the temple of the living God. Why would you, as the temple of God, want a pagan idol inside of you, in your heart? It doesn't belong there. They're opposites, right? There's nobody who is both sin or saint at the same time. The beast is. Okay? He is not, yet is, in a quantum state at the exact same time. And I'm going to leave you with the world, according to the Bible, the world of the bottomless pit that allows for the beast to be is not, yet is. It allows for light to be as darkness at the same time. What am I talking about? Look at Job chapter 10, verse 21. Before I go whence I shall not return, even to the land of darkness and the shadow of death. A land of darkness as darkness itself and the shadow of death without, notice this, without any order. Stop right here. That means that the order of the physical universe does not apply there. It doesn't have rules such as if you want to go from point A to point B, you have to travel through all the space between those two places. It doesn't have that rule. It doesn't have the rule of if you want to write something on a piece of paper, you actually have to put the pencil and the paper in the same place in order for one to affect the other. They don't have that rule there. Okay? The quantum state. What if something wants to be darkness and light? In this universe, it has order, it has rules. It cannot happen. In the land of darkness, it doesn't have any order. Now notice this. A land of darkness as darkness itself and in the shadow of death without any order, where the light is as darkness. Psalm 88:6, thou hast laid me in the lowest pit in darkness in the deeps. Psalm 107:10, such as sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, being bound in affliction and iron. There's your iron kingdom right there. They come from the land of darkness where there is no order, where a bit on a computer can be in a superposition of off, zero, and on, one, at the same time. This Bible explains it better than any physicist that I've ever heard from. When I read stuff about the quantum world online, I'm just going, I have no idea what they, usually they talk in that physics science talk, right? Those words, I have no idea what they mean. This Bible explains it very plainly, very clearly. The beast who is not yet is comes from the land of the shadow of death, where light and darkness exist at the same time in the same place. Next week, we're going to get deeper with it, and we're going to do it by way of the scriptures. But I'm just explaining to you a computer, a quantum computer operating in such a way is that it can violate all the known rules that we have and do computations that are literally out of this world. Such a computer wouldn't take it very long at all for it to be the master and us the slave. See, right now we tell Cortana what to do, and Cortana does what we tell her to do. We tell Siri, Siri, give me the weather for today. Siri just comes up with the weather. Doesn't say, well, I don't want to today. I don't feel good today. I have a headache today. It doesn't do that. It doesn't have its own will. But it won't take long, will it? Computers operating in that sort of way for them to have self-will. It's a Bible term. And for the servants then to become our masters. And people are going to willingly give up at the altar of the alien God all of their rights and their humanity in order to please the God so the God will bless them. Okay? This is the future where everything's going. I got to run. I've been talking too long today. I love you. God bless you. You're the reason why we do what we do. We'll continue this next time. We'll see you. Bye-bye.